My guest today is a native El Pasoan who, after completing a degree in the arts in New York, returned to, quote, see how far an idea could affect reality and make a difference in my hometown. Peter Svarsbein, welcome to State of the Arts.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
So, what's your conclusion? Can one person affect reality and make a difference?
I think we all have our own responsibility to bring a little light to this world. So I think whether it's me or it's you or somebody else, we all have an opportunity in this life to bring a little bit more light and leave this world a little bit of a better place than where we found it.
So. Well, you are really walking the talk because in July of 2015, you took office.
Yes.
As a city representative.
City council representative for District 1 in El Paso, Texas.
Did you have the slightest idea what you were getting yourself into?
Yes and no. I think there's a tremendous amount of growth and learning that goes on. And I think that a lot of the job is trying to relate and to listen to people. And I think in a roundabout way, my background in photography had helped with that. You know, when you go to make a portrait, you know, I was fortunate to be represented in New York by a photo agency and had photographed for clients like the Wall Street Journal and Fortune Magazine, New York Times. And what you learn in making a portrait is that a portrait is not so much about what the person behind the camera sees, but it's as much about what the person in front of the camera sees themselves as.
Mm-hmm.
And so really that portrait is a negotiation, conversation really between those two, between the photographer and the subject, with the camera as a medium. And in a sense, I think some of that helped me in the area of policy, in that working with constituents, you know, it's about listening. And it's about trying to facilitate, whether it's through an issue of policy or issue of streets or of an issue of doggy bags. You know, you try to help connect and facilitate. But no, I don't think I had a clue about exactly what I was going to be involved in.
Why would a person, unless you grew up in a family of politicians, there's no way you could know going in. So it is a leap.
I think that with my thesis project with the El Paso Transnational Trolley, I had met folks that are involved within the sort of political scene in El Paso and had seen it sort of close up. But that's very different than being in a position where you are the policymaker, you're the elected official. And so a lot of that is also getting comfortable with the idea and the notion that you listen to as many sides as you can. You know, at least my philosophy, some people's philosophy is, you elected me to make the tough decisions, I'm going to do that, next question. And I think I try to approach it of trying to listen to as, you know, different sides as possible, see, really try to listen to what the concerns are and try to come to a place of compromise that maybe not everybody's happy with, but they're able to feel comfortable moving forwards.
Yeah.
And that's really easier said than done, because at the end of the day, with some decisions and some policy, you're going to have a situation where some people are just not going to be happy.
To a degree, it's almost, kind of like parenting. If you really are serious about it and uncompromising, everybody dislikes you a little bit most of the time. But I like the way you explained the concept of listening, because sometimes artists are perceived as people who don't have to think about any other influence other than what they desire to express. But when you are a professional artist, you have to do that kind of listening to anticipate the expectations of a client, or else your work is not going to hit the mark. So that ability to temper your creativity with practical requirements. And of course, in politics, it's very heavy on that, tempering everything with the practical requirements. Let's drop back a little bit. I love the story of your parents. Would you tell about where your parents came from and how they met?
I'm very fortunate to be the son of immigrants. I wouldn't think that being an immigrant was so charged, but I'm very, very proud to be a son of immigrants, and the negotiation and celebration occurs with that. My dad came to the United States from Argentina. He had the opportunity to do his residency at Albert Einstein Medical in the Bronx at Montefiore. And the head OR nurse at the time was my mother, Sylvia. And she evidently in the 70s was going through a bit of a Latin thing, and she found this somewhat tall, handsome,
Leonardo,
dark, you know, Latin American doctor to be, and Jewish to boot. And so for her, they evidently dated for a number of years and then decided to want to settle at someplace warm and bilingual, where my father's accent and him being Spanish dominant could be a benefit and not a hindrance. My mother's side, you know, my mother was born in Toulouse, France. She was the daughter of a Holocaust survivor from Czechoslovakia. My grandmother, Cecilia Camp, was the youngest of 10 brothers and sisters. She had one sister, Aunt Helen, the oldest, who escaped to Philly before the war, and she was the only one that survived outside of my grandmother. And my grandmother, as a teenager, worked in a chocolate factory in Belgium, pretended to be a Gentile, and then was eventually caught and put in a labor camp. And my grandfather, my mother's father, Pedro Campello, who I'm named after, rescued her from the camp she was in. They had my mother in France. And Pedro died when my mother was about 5. They ended up coming to America to live with my Aunt Helen. My grandmother worked as a live-in maid for a number of years before becoming a tailor for almost 50 years in Atlantic City. And she did everything she could to work with my mother, and my mother became a nurse, and that's where my parents met. And my dad, when he was looking at places, he was looking someplace warm and bilingual. He was looking at Miami, Palm Springs, Austin, New Orleans, and he just happened to have a friend of him as a residency who said, I have a friend, Juan Carlos Morgadas, who just moved to El Paso. He's Argentine as well. If you're going to Texas, you should check him out. And my dad's idea of America at the time was, you know, New York, New Jersey, Long Island, you know, like he didn't, the Poconos, you know,
that was like,
oh, so if he's in Texas, it can't be that far, right?
Right, of course.
So
we'll meet for lunch.
Yeah, right. So he flies into El Paso, and when he came to El Paso, there was like a group of doctors there to greet him, and before they even had a chance to put his bags down, they went to Juarez. You know, they had this amazing 4-hour meal that was, you know, quite typical. Mm-hmm. And he fell in love. For him, it was the best of both worlds. He could have the economic opportunities of the United States and the cultural life and vitality of Latin America. And I think that story is true for so many El Pasoans. And it's something that we need to figure out a way to bottle it and sell it to the world.
It certainly affects the lives of everyone who is born here or comes here for various reasons. El Paso is an intriguing place.
How fortunate are we? How fortunate
extremely,
are we?
Extremely, extremely fortunate.
That we can go and look into two countries, into two separate cities, and celebrate our humanity by that action alone.
I have mentioned on previous shows that I was born in Mexico, grew up here in El Paso from the time I was just a child, but so many issues of social strife were a surprise to me. Until I left El Paso and realized things like there really are two sides of the tracks, because around here it's pretty much a non-issue. We just hash things out quickly and move on and get along fairly well. But you were educated right here. You went to El Paso Hebrew Day School and El Paso Country High School.
Yep.
Then where did you head off to?
So I ended up going to Franklin and Marshall College in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. It's a small liberal arts college. I think I romanticized the East Coast, I think, a little bit in high school. It's where my parents met.
I kind of think everybody still does. You know, East and West Coast is still the happening place.
Yeah. My mom raised us as Philadelphia Eagles fans, for example.
Yeah.
So we got a big game this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And for me, and I'm very, very fortunate, but I guess for me, I wanted the opportunity for college not just necessarily to get a degree and learn out of books, but also learn something about myself. Mm-hmm. And I figured leaving would be a great opportunity to do that. And so Franklin and Marshall was a wonderful school. It was a small liberal arts college in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. I think my parents liked it because it had a strong pre-law and pre-med program. And I didn't go down either of those tracks.
Well, what did you think you were going there for when you went?
I think to
to get out of El Paso.
No, I think too. I think I was going out to get an education, go to college, and
but you hadn't. It hadn't been decided for you that you would do this or that.
No, I think I came in and with a pre-med track, and I think very early on, one of my first electives was an intro to reading and writing poetry class with Dr. Nathaniel Smith. I can't believe I still remember that. I was a voracious reader in high school. We used to go to Dolce Vita and read Jack Kerouac novels and Kurt Vonnegut and Philip Roth, Catch 22, and do whatever you do sitting in front of Dolce Vita and pretending you're
an somebody, intellectual.
Yeah.
Well, you just might be. Oh, man, that's the scary part, you know.
So well, that no. was, that's how I kind of got.
What switched the focus, pardon the pun, to photo and video?
I think what I some of the things I sort of figured out was I had did photography in high school as an elective.
Oh, okay.
And my dad had an old Olympus OM-1 that he gave me, and I took it, shot with it a lot, and really enjoyed photography. Kept it up in college, although it was like the cover of the Literary Arts magazine. They had an old dark room in the basement of the student center, so I would go into there. But it wasn't like they offered classes. And my senior semester, I had a friend of mine, Randy Wilkins, who is currently his associate editor for She's Got to Have It on Netflix. He works with Spike Lee at 40 Acres and a Mule. He was doing a documentary on a African-American barbershop in downtown Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Randy and I had a series of radio shows together in college, of which I don't know if there's any tapes. But if
do you hope there are or hope
so,
there
you
aren't.
Could possibly hear me rapping in some of them and badly. And college is about experimentation, you know, learning things about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a very good rapper. But Randy and I had ended up working on this documentary together, and I ended up throwing up lights, helping him light this video documentary. I did a photo essay with it, and I found myself more engaged and involved in helping to produce this documentary and helping to make these series of photos in any short story or poetry class I took. And that led me to going back for a post-bac to get a minor in studio art and then going to a technical photo program and moving to New York. And I said, let me go after college. I took my GREs in Austin. I said, let me go back to college and see how far I could push photography and figured if nothing happened to it, then it wasn't meant to be. But that's kind of how it came about.
We are visiting with the city representative for District 1, Peter Svarsbein, about his journey from artist to politician. We'll be right back.